This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
St. Patrick's Day 2025, and I hope you're enjoying the day and maybe engaging in the wearing of the green, perhaps. I want to thank Armando Gonzalez, who is the Regional Director of Technical Operations for Odyssey out of Dallas, Danny Miller, Ernie Kane, team of engineers, and others that have all come together to upgrade the studios at WWL, and they're working like crazy to get us up to the latest standards and have all the bells and whistles. And thanks to those guys and ladies, I don't know how many are involved, for working so hard to keep WWL sounding great. We appreciate it. We really do. And we hope we're not making it hard for y'all. We're just trying to keep the water flowing, as you say. The water will be green in Chicago today as they dye the river for St. Patty's Day, and we thought, or St. Patty's Day, actually, and we thought we'd spend an hour talking about the history of the Irish in America. And Kevin Kenny joins us now, Glucksman Professor of History at New York University. Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Good morning. It's good to be with you.
Would it be cliche to say top of the morning to you?
Not at all. Top of the morning to you.
Would the response be in the rest of the evening to you, or the rest of the day to you, something like that?
Something like that, or may the road rise before you.
Are you from Ireland, I presume?
Yeah. I'm from Dublin originally.
I had the pleasure of visiting your country almost 10 years ago now, and I was just blown away. You think of it as lush and green and beautiful, and it, with the lakes, and it doesn't even begin to describe how beautiful the country is, and I hope I get to go back. So let's talk about quickly, if we can, the differences between St. Patrick's Day here in America and Ireland.
Oh, that's a good question. So the difference between St. Patrick's Day here and in Ireland, I'll tell you, when I was growing up in Ireland, St. Patrick's Day was fairly small festival. It was one day off in Lent. So if you were observing Lent as children, that meant giving up candy. Mm-hmm. As alcohol, as adults, meant giving up something a little stronger. You got one day off school, and you got one day off Lent, and there might be a small little parade or festival. That's all changed, and now St. Patrick's Day over there is a big festival with leprechauns and shillelaghs and the rest of it. And you know, the interesting thing is a lot of that was imported back into Ireland from America.
It's interesting, huh? About life imitating art, however you want to look at it. A fun side note, there's a young lady who grew up in the Irish Channel, Brandy Corkin, that went to school at Northwestern State University. And that band actually marched in the St. Patrick's Day parade in Dublin, and for a long time in the airport. She's a young Irish young lady with red hair. And her picture was at the Dublin airport, which is funny because you would think it would be an Irish band or an Irish person, but it was from America, and it just goes to how the, I guess, the cultures go back and forth. Let's talk about what led to the Irish coming to America, what with this talk that we have now of immigration, and how they were received. The conditions first in Ireland that led to them coming here.
Yeah, so like actually the first thing we have to understand is we have a story that Irish emigration to the United States began in the 1840s, right, with the big catastrophe, the Great Irish Famine. And I hope we'll talk about that today. But the first thing we need to understand is that there were Irish in the United States and in New Orleans long before that. So there were Irish people started leaving that island in large numbers around the year 1700, right, a century and a half before the familiar story begins. And those Irish were Protestants. They were Presbyterians. They were the ancestors of the people today that we call the Scots-Irish or the Scotch-Irish. The name varies. So there were significant numbers of Irish coming to America, coming, as I said, even to New Orleans in the 18th century and in the early 19th century. And actually, if you were to look for when St. Patrick's Day was first celebrated in New Orleans, I believe it would have been in 1809. Some people may say earlier. But the people celebrating that holiday were the Protestant Irish, not the Catholic Irish. And it's very important that we recognize that heritage. Because there's about 35 million Americans today claim Irish heritage at any time. Of course, on St. Patrick's Day, everybody claims Irish heritage. But at any one time other than today, big chunk of the American population, about 35 million. But a lot of them are of Protestant Irish heritage. So as a historian, I just wanted to make that point, and we can talk about that if you wish.
Yeah, I wish you would.
Big event. Go ahead, Tommy.
No, Professor, I want to hear, but I got 1,000 questions, so you keep talking, and I'll interrupt when I sense you stop.
Yeah, yeah, and so the big event then that comes a little bit later and is decisive is the Irish famine in the 1840s. That's the big, well-known event. There is a prehistory before that. The big event is the famine.
When it comes to the famine, one thing I learned in Ireland, and it goes to the song "The Fields of Athenry," and I got to be careful here because a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. But a lot of what goes on are the troubles, as they say, between the Protestant and Protestants and the Catholics in Ireland.
Yeah,
it was not about religion, as a lot of people think. It was more about, I guess, the crown and about how Trevelyan had enough food to feed the people, but he chose to import it, and that led to the famine. Am I off base there or not, Professor?
You're not off base. So I'll tell you what happened. In 1845, there were 8.5 million people living on that island, 8.5 million people. The number of people living on the island today is still only 7 million.
Wow.
Right, so it's begun to grow over the last quarter century or so, but the population of Ireland reached its all-time peak in 1845. And what happened over the next 10 years, with 5 years of famine and then sustained emigration, is that the population of that country was reduced by one-third. Now, that's a demographic catastrophe without any parallel in modern European history. 1 million plus died of starvation and famine-related disease. 2.1 million people fled that country as emigrants. And if you want to look really for the foundational myth of Irish American history, the more familiar Irish America, the Catholic Irish America, because now it was Catholics who were leaving, you find it in the famine. And the idea is to quote one Irish nationalist exile, his name was John Mitchell, and he moved from Ireland into the American South. He lived in Tennessee. And John Mitchell said, the Almighty indeed sent the potato blight, but the English created the famine. So there was a potato blight, sure, you know, but you have to distinguish between crop failure and mass starvation. So that's the, if you like, the foundational nationalist explanation of what happened in Ireland in the 1840s.
And that's why I wanted to have you on and clear that up, because that came as a surprise to me. Just, you know, and we can talk about the troubles and so forth, but I always thought it was about Irish and Protestant, and it really wasn't. It was about one government starving a generation of people, right? I mean, would that be accurate?
It would be accurate, but the religious side of it is important, right? Okay. Irish history, the religious side is always important. So, look, Ireland in the 19th century was a colony of the British Empire. It was so much a colony that it was basically just gobbled up, so close to the island of Great Britain that, you know, Ireland never stood a chance strategically. It had to be conquered and governed. It was England's first colony. And Northern Ireland remains, you could say, England's last colony. So we have to understand this in terms of Ireland as a colony of the British Empire. Within that context, Protestant people had relative privilege. So whether they were Irish Protestants or whether they were English or Scottish Protestants who moved into Ireland, they made up about 25% of the population. But in terms of land ownership, in terms of political office, in terms of any measure of opportunity and privilege, Protestants stood above the dispossessed, impoverished Catholic population. Right, so you can see that you can't actually understand the colonial relationship in Irish history unless you plug religion back in.
So I guess I'm wondering, did the religion drive the political part of it, or did the political, or was the religion just part of the political part of it? Maybe I didn't phrase that properly, but
you did phrase it well, and the answer I would give is, like, if you step back from this process for a moment, and you what I would say is that you've been to Ireland. You just described how beautiful it is. It's a small island off the northwest of Europe, and its great historical misfortune is that it happened to be located next to a larger island that created the biggest empire the world had ever seen, the British Empire. If you look at it in that context, Ireland is a stepping stone for invasion of England by the French, by the Spanish. If you just look at it in strategic terms, Ireland didn't stand a chance. Ireland was always going to be conquered by its more powerful neighbor. Now, everything else is justification and rationale. People can say, oh, the Irish are poor, the Irish are inferior, the Irish are Catholic. The imperial ruler can say, we're better, we're more civilized, we are Protestant. The rest of it. But all of that is just justification for a powerful neighbor exploiting a weaker neighbor. And that history often works that way, I think.
It does. Let me take a break, Professor. We'll pick it up when we come back. If you all have any questions or comments about Ireland, we're talking about it with Professor Kevin Kenny, Glicksman Professor of History at New York University, about the history of Ireland on this St. Patrick's Day. We'll talk about the troubles when we come back and the history. I know I'm an old film guy, as you guys know. I love old movies, and you can find movies about the troubles going back to the 20s and the 30s and beyond that. So it's been going on for quite some time. And a bus driver told a joke, Professor, I don't know if you've heard this or not, about in the days where a Protestant left a bomb in a Dublin hotel, and a Dublin manager came back and ran out and gave it back to him. That's how prevalent it was. Funny now, not then. We'll take a break. Return. Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us on this St. Patrick's Day 2025 WWL.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 40% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
St. Patrick's Day 2025, Tommy Tucker, WWL, a lot of activities going on today in the Irish Channel. We thought we'd spend an hour talking to Kevin Kenny, Glucksman Professor of History at New York University. If you've been to Ireland, give me a text at 504-260-1870, the Oquinar Jeweler Talking text line. I'd love to know your thoughts on the country. I know it's on a bucket list for a lot of people, and I was fortunate enough to go. Professor, when it comes to the Troubles, and I mentioned old movies, Victor McLaughlin, an Irish actor that was a boxer, and he was in The Quiet Man. He's the guy John Wayne fought, if you saw that movie. But his first movie, or one of the movies he was in early on, was The Informer, where he plays a guy with the IRA that informed on a fellow member and pays the price for that. In The Quiet Man itself, there's a mention of the IRA. Tell me about the history of the Troubles, if you will, throughout the years and how finally they came to an end, or if they are at an end.
Yeah, the history of the Troubles, the big, big question in Irish history. So if we think of Ireland, as I described it, as a colony, the first and last colony in the British Empire, some people in Ireland, especially in what we call Northern Ireland today, like that relationship. They favor being part of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern
Professor,
Ireland.
Let me jump in for a second if I can, because I know when you cross over into Northern Ireland, you got to change your money. And I guess, in essence, you are in Great Britain, are you not, or am I wrong?
You are indeed, yeah. Okay. So you stop using euros, the currency of the European Union, and you start using pounds, sterling. So the island of Ireland was partitioned. It was cut into two different sections in 1920. The creation of two different political entities on the same island. 26 of the 32 Irish counties won their independence from Britain and its empire. But six of the counties up in the north remained part of the British Empire. So today you've got the Republic of Ireland, which has 26 counties, but you've also got Northern Ireland, which is six of the 32 counties that remain part of Britain and the last colony, if you like, of the British Empire. And that's where the troubles begin, right? Because if you zero in on Northern Ireland, one of the two states on the island, right? You've got the Republic to the south, you've got Northern Ireland, which remains part of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Well, within that small area, until recently, the majority of the population, being Protestant, want to stay part of Great Britain, but the growing minority within that six-county area are Catholic, and they want to break that relationship and reunite Ireland. From 1968 to 1998, you had the period of the Troubles, and that was the outbreak, really, of a civil war within Northern Ireland between the growing Catholic minority who wanted to reunite with the Republic of Ireland and the small but diminishing Protestant majority who wanted to retain the relationship with Britain. That's what the Troubles are about. Now, this has big repercussions internationally because there is an Irish diaspora. People say that maybe 70 million people around the world have Irish descent, and somewhere in the region of half or more of them are here in the United States. And the American Irish and some pretty high-ranking political figures helped broker a peace deal that did bring peace to the island. It's a fragile peace. It's an unstable peace. But the period of the Troubles right now is at an end.
Professor, when the Troubles at the height of it, was it just Northern Ireland, or did it extend the part that was Ireland in and of itself?
Yeah, it almost never came south. I was a teenager growing up in Dublin during that period. The worst of the Troubles was in the 1970s, and there was one bombing campaign in Dublin. And that was launched by the what we call the loyalist side. The Protestant paramilitaries came down into the Republic, and they did a bombing campaign one day. But nearly all of the violence in the Troubles was confined to that small section of the island that is called Northern Ireland. So it was a small little place with a small population. Relative to the size of that population, a lot of people were killed.
The hour is flying by, Professor. Let's take a break. We come back. I want to talk about the Irish in America, because I don't think they were very well received initially. Again, like you're saying, on St. Patrick's Day, everybody wants to be Irish. That was not the case back when they first came to America. We'll talk about that when we return, talking to Kevin Kenny, a Glucksman professor of history at New York University from County. What was it, Professor?
I'm from Dublin. City of Dublin.
Okay. 9:35, 25 till then. Boy, that statue that is there with the pigeon droppings, you got to clean that, Professor. I'm just kidding. 25 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:43, 17 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL. It's St. Patrick's Day, so we thought we'd talk about the history of Ireland, and now we move on to the Irish in America. Kevin Kenny is our guest, Glucksman Professor of History at New York University. And, Professor, I was in Dublin, and I was getting about the statue earlier. I don't know, who is it in some square, whatever, that statue that's, it's white is what it is because of the pigeons. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
But I was in a pub, if that's how you say it, and ordered a Jameson's with ice. And, man, you thought I had said something bad about somebody's mother. Apparently that's a no-no.
That's a no-no, yeah. You wouldn't adulterate Jameson's with ice. You might put water in it if you were faint of heart.
How do you feel about all of these flavored Jameson's whiskeys?
Not my favorite thing.
No, I didn't think they would be. That seems like an Americanization of an Irish product. But let's move on. You say that everybody wants to be Irish on St. Patrick's Day, and I think you're right, but I don't think you would have wanted to be Irish back in the 1840s when they were coming to this country, would you?
No, indeed, you would not. The Irish who came here in that period faced a huge amount of prejudice. You know, if you were in New York City at that time in 1850, 1860, just after the famine, about one quarter of the population was Irish-born. So one in four people was born in Ireland. So this famine migration had a big impact on the cities in Boston, in New York, in Philadelphia, in New Orleans, too. And native-born Americans, looking at these immigrants, initially, they didn't like what they saw. They didn't like that these were the poorest European immigrants they had ever seen. And they had a lot of prejudice. They didn't like how they looked, how they dressed, how they smelled. They didn't like the language they spoke, because a lot of them spoke Irish. And above all, they didn't like their religion, because nearly all of these poor immigrants coming in as a result of the famine were Catholic. And they were coming into a country at that time that really defined itself through Protestant religion, and that looked very suspiciously on Catholic immigrants. It's a bit hard for us to understand today, but anti-Catholicism in American history survived right through the 19th century, you could say until 1960. When John F. Kennedy was elected president, he had to explain to the American public, he said, no, I am not the Catholic candidate for president. I am the Democratic candidate who happens to be a Catholic. You could say that Kennedy's election, you know, put the last nail in the coffin for anti-Catholicism. But until then, hostility to Catholics, suspicion of Catholics, was really very central in American culture. Now, why in the 1840s would native-born Protestants have been suspicious of Catholics? Well, they said, you know, they're not fully American. There's a hyphen there. They're Irish-American. They're Catholic-American. Their ultimate loyalty lies to the Pope in Rome. And, you know, they don't like our public school system. The public school system is one of the great accomplishments of American democracy. But these newcomers, they want their own schools. They want their parish schools. We have other ideas to do with temperance, moderation on consumption of alcohol, anti-slavery and abolitionism, and they don't seem to be going along with us, right? So there's a huge cultural conflict. And I would say what the significance of the Irish arrival, especially in terms of religion, is they stuck to their guns and they said, no, we want to become Americans. We can become good Americans, but that doesn't mean we have to give up our heritage, and particularly our religious heritage, in order to do so.
Professor, talk, if you would, about the importance of the development of America and the part that the Irish played in it, and also, was it at their expense, and were they justly compensated for it?
The Irish provided a lot of the brute physical labor to build the infrastructure of this country. So Irish men were laborers, so much so that the American term for a common laborer in the 19th century was a paddy. So a laborer was a paddy. The Irish dug the ditches, they broke things, they built things, they built canals, they built railroads, they built the infrastructure of cities. Sometimes in the South, they did jobs that were considered too dangerous for others, including for African American slaves, because slaves were property. The Irish were expandable. I'm not saying the Irish were worse off in general, but I am saying that, right?
No, sure. And look, Professor, I just wanted to address that. It's an elephant in the room. A lot of people say whenever you talk about slavery, they say the Irish had it bad. But I think what you just said, it puts a real ribbon around it. That's a bad phrase, but it summarizes it where slaves were treated terribly, but at least people thought that they were property. And I'm not justifying any of that at all. That's not what I'm saying. But, the person said, well, okay, at least I have something to lose here. The person that owned the slave, as wrong as that was. But with the Irish, it was expendable. I think that's a tremendous way you put that.
Yeah, there is some truth in that. And obviously, in saying that, I'm not in no way diminishing the unique horror of slavery. Absolutely. I mean, African Americans, after all, were owned as property.
Exactly.
But that's the whole point. The Irish were expendable. There are cases, there are real cases, where the Irish were put to work draining swamps in Louisiana and building infrastructure, building canals, and dying of malaria. And if you invested in the human property of owning another human being, you'd suffer a loss, right? In no way in saying that am I saying that the Irish were worse off than African Americans.
No, I understand.
I'm just pointing to two forms of exploitation.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, the Irish built the country
So what about, Professor, and I'm just looking at the clock here, so we look at what they received in return for the contribution they made, and your thoughts would be what?
Quite a lot, because unlike black people at that time, they could enter the country freely. They could move around. They could get jobs. They could naturalize as citizens. They could vote, and they could hold political office. And although the Irish were discriminated against when they arrived, overall, the American Irish ended up doing really well, really quickly, from a historian's point of view. Within a couple of generations, even the most impoverished of the famine Irish were making huge strides economically and politically, partly because they were white.
What's the situation in Ireland today, Professor? And for Irish Americans, we'll close it that way.
There, you know, Ireland is part of Europe, but it gravitates towards the United States. It's the United States is a hugely important part of every Irish person's identity. Every Irish person on that island has connections with the United States. It's a positive and very important relationship, and it's mediated by a diaspora of tens of millions of people with a heritage in Ireland, but with a homeland abroad, and nowhere more so than in the United States.
As for the Irish in America?
Looking at Ireland?
Well, just in general. Just in general about the progress that Irish people have made in America, and are they on an equal footing now with everybody else, or ahead?
They're more than on an equal footing. Mm-hmm. If you were to measure how people of Irish descent in America today, people who identify as Irish American, if you measure their social situation by any conventional measure, whether it's income, occupation, education level, or home ownership, they're above the national average.
When it comes to, as a historian, an Irish historian, a native of Ireland, if you would have a couple of words of advice for Americans that you would never, never, ever like to see them do again as far as Irish culture or wanting to be Irish, what would you say?
I really wouldn't.
Because
have,
look, let me tell you why. Because here in New Orleans, we have our own thing, and it's like watch a movie, and it's like, come on, don't do that. Don't really.
Yeah,
no, that's not how we. Exactly.
I get it. Yeah.
What would you say?
The caricature of the Irish. I get it. the Irish today are a pretty savvy, sophisticated bunch. You may go over there in search of, some romantic past and some pure Irish peasantry, and you could go into a pub looking for that as a returned Yank, and they would happily string you along and tell you whatever you wanted to hear, but don't believe a word of it.
That is an awesome way to end this. Professor, I've enjoyed our time. Have a happy St. Patrick's Day.
You too. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you.
Kevin Kenny, Glucksman Professor of History at New York University. They will happily string you along, but don't believe a word of it. 9:54, quick break. We'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.